Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, December 3rd, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
First Lady Grace Mugabe says Zimbabweans must cherish the political independence and peace they are enjoying in the country despite the hardships they are currently facing.
People's Democratic Party leader and former finance minister Tendai Biti urges parliament and ordinary Zimbabweans to reject the so-called mega deals signed between Harare and Beijing until their contents are made public.
What is also important is that these agreements don't prejudice Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe needs capital, but that capital must not come at a price.
And the People's Democratic Party, or PDP, says the imposition of ideas by some opposition parties discouraged them from signing a national document aimed at fighting for electoral reforms ahead of the 2018 general elections.
These and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
With the dust still to settle following Chinese President Xi Jinping's visit to Zimbabwe, which saw Zimbabwe and China penning the so-called mega deals, opposition People's Democratic Party leader and former finance minister Tendai Biti is urging Zimbabweans to reject them until their contents are made public. Ivan Chifera is more.
Among the deals signed are the $1.4 billion and $98 million China's Export and Import Bank's concessionary loan agreements for the expansion of Wangi Power Station and Telone's fiber optic project, respectively. The other deals were agreements for the construction of the National Pharmaceutical Warehouse, New Parliament, and donation of wildlife monitoring equipment. The other agreements cover cooperation in aviation, avoidance of double taxation, and prevention of fiscal evasion, while the other ones cover the agreement on a framework on investment cooperation, and the other covers technical and economic cooperation. Biti told Studio 7, ordinary people must reject all these deals until their contents are made public and the contracts published. He adds, all these deals must be taken to Parliament for scrutiny.
What is also important is that these agreements don't prejudice Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe needs capital, but that capital must not come at a price. But I think what is key is that we demand that those agreements be tabled before Parliament, as is required by our constitution, and then Zimbabweans should start the same.
He said previous Chinese deals signed between Harare and Beijing did not benefit Zimbabweans.
For instance, the Zimbabwean government contracted the Chinese to build the Zimbabwe Defense College for $100 million, but anyone who knows will tell you that that college shouldn't have cost us more than $30 million. The Zimbabwean government contracted Sino Hydro to put the two power generators at Kariba South. Zambia did it for less than $300 million. Zimbabwe is going to pay $500 million. That's not good enough.
Former Treasury Chief Economist Masimba Manyanya tells Studio 7, while Zimbabwe desperately needs money for infrastructure development, there is need for financial and economic governance structures that protect the integrity of national policy.
If you don't have a way in which you can track funds openly, and transparent, and to check with the principles of and values of transparency and accountability, then we are evidently headed for disaster. The very term of mega deal, when the bottom has got holes, is scary.
He said there is nothing wrong with Harare borrowing money from the Chinese as long as the money is used wisely. Economic commentator Masimba Kuchera says what's worrying about the Chinese deals is the lack of transparency. He said another major area of concern was that all these Chinese-funded projects were awarded to Chinese companies, adding, in most cases, they imported every material from China, brought their own engineers, and only hired ordinary laborers in Zimbabwe. Despite all these concerns, Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa says the Chinese were playing a crucial role in reviving the country's economy, especially through power generation.
What we need is what to do in the immediate what to do in the immediate. And there are plans to secure emergency power supply through diesel power engine generators.
A representative of Sinohydro, a Chinese company that has been contracted for the Wange project, Noel Gona, told the state-owned Herald newspaper recently that the project would start following President Xi's visit. He, however, said besides the Chinese loan funds, the Zimbabwean government would have to pay $300 million for the project. According to the Minister of Finance, there are more than 100 Chinese companies operating in Zimbabwe. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Thanks, Ivan. Meanwhile, Zimbabwe should review its labor and investment policies if it is to attract foreign direct investors. This, according to some Chinese business people already in the country, as Arthur Chigoriwa reports from Chinoy.
Yang Zimeng, manager of Zim China Wangjin Agricultural Development Company based in Chinoy, said stringent Zimbabwean labor laws and investment policy are a major bottleneck to foreigners wishing to invest their money in the country. Zimeng's company's interest in farming and brick molding. Zimbabwe, he says, is endowed with natural resources and good weather, which is a big draw card to its advantage. A big area of concern to many Chinese wishing to set up businesses in Zimbabwe, Zimeng adds, are the prohibitive investment policies that are chasing away foreign investors. Zimeng, who was giving us this interview under the watchful eye of an officer from the Defense Ministry at Chinoy Farm, said Harare also should improve on work permit application and allow the smooth flow of goods and capital into the country.
Farming sector, I think Zimbabwe is quite a fascinating place to do the planting here. You have so many good resources, for example, the land, the climate, and the farming workers. I think they are pretty good.
You said Zimbabwean labor laws largely disadvantage the employer. He is against the idea of a minimum wage set by the government, saying wages should be determined by the worker's performance.
I think it is too strict. See, they will set the minimum of the salary, so all the workers must be paid more than that standard.
Asked about cheap Chinese imports that have flooded the Zimbabwean market, leading many to not be Chinese, the youthful manager lays the blame on Zimbabwean business people who he said import too many cheap Chinese products and damage the image of Chinese products. Zimeng said China produces products for all classes, and generally there is a balance between the price and the quality of the goods. Benjamin Kativo of Chinoy concurs, adding products coming into the country are by standard associations by the authorities.
So if you go there and you look for the cheapest thing, you get it.
Some workers at the brick molding plant who spoke to Studio 7 said although their wages are below the stipulated rate, they are happy that at least the money comes on time.
Although our salary is not what we expected, but the good thing is that the Chinese give us our money on time without fail.
The workers, however, complain about the strict time management by the Chinese, whose work ethic is lauded by many around the world. Most workers, as a result, stay within the company premises to avoid time wasting. Another worker, Mushite Kandongwe, said the Chinese don't condone laziness and are hard workers.
The challenge that is there is that the Chinese are hardworking. They are cultured to be very hardworking. If they set a target that by this time we should finish this,
yes,
they would rather say, let us go large until we finish what we started.
Zimeng says Zimbabwe is using cheap products like farm bricks to construct houses in areas.
Thanks, Arthur Chigoriwa. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 medium wave and on the 4930-5940 and 15455 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com or you can text us at 001-202-465-0318. Now a look at regional and international news.
South Africa's Supreme Court of Appeal has convicted double amputee athlete Oscar Pistorius of murder, overturning his earlier conviction of culpable homicide, a less serious charge.
A new congressional report has described the U.S. Secret Service as an agency in crisis after years of deep budget cuts, systematic mismanagement, and low morale among its ever-shrinking workforce.
And renewed fighting was reported in central Somalia today, a day after the leaders of the rival Puntland and the Galmadag administrations signed a peace deal. At least 10 people were killed and more than 30 others wounded, according to medical officials.
The South African government says the country is ready to host a successful Forum for China-Africa Cooperation Summit, which kicks off in Johannesburg tomorrow. The two-day summit will run under the theme Africa-China Progressing Together, Win-Win Cooperation for Common Development. The Chinese President Xi Jinping and President Robert Mugabe are already in South Africa for the summit, while other heads of state of most of Africa's 54 countries have already started arriving. Benedict Nhlapo reports from Johannesburg, South Africa.
With still a few hours left before the start of the first FOCAC summit in Africa, two African countries are already celebrating, and Zimbabwe is one of them. On his way to the summit, Chinese President Xi Jinping witnessed the signing of 10 economic agreements between China and Zimbabwe, totaling an estimated $4 billion and expected by many to revive the country's ailing economy. But South Africa has won much more. President Zuma gave thumbs up to China's strategy of building win-win relations with African countries after his country penned over two dozen agreements with China on Wednesday.
We have just witnessed the signing of 26 agreements that are worth 94 billion rand.
And the Chinese president has made it clear that he wants the relationship of China and African countries taken to greater heights.
We need to maintain close high-level exchanges, strengthen the sharing of governance experience, and also on issues concerning our major concerns, we should extend mutual understanding and support.
As the FOCAC summit kickoff draws close, all eyes are now on China to see what it will bring to the table for the other 52 African countries. The summit is expected to adopt the Johannesburg Declaration and Action Plan, outlining specific measures aimed at consolidating China-Africa relations. Gideon Chitanga, researcher at the Center for Study of Democracy at the University of Johannesburg, says China and African countries look committed to reviving their historical relationship dating back to the colonial era, where most of these countries received help from China.
There is indeed an understanding and a zeal, if not an interest, to recultivate these relations and turn them into formal diplomatic, political and economic relations, which can be mutually beneficial to the 54 countries in Africa and China in particular.
But China's intentions have received mixed feelings from ordinary Africans. Zimbabwean national Janet Mnakamwe cautions African countries to be aware of the strings attached to their deals with China.
It's actually conditioned kinds of investment or funds, of which China will be like, we have donated or we have given Zimbabwe this amount of money, so you have to listen to whatever we're going to say. We are the ones who've got the capital in this case.
But others, like South African national Ruben Tatis, says China has demonstrated genuine efforts to take Africa out of poverty.
It's not colonization if we are selling ourselves. Others might want to imagine that, some form of colonization, but we haven't been pressured by anyone except by our own appetite for what the Chinese are bringing.
China is Africa's largest individual trading partner, with their trade volume amounting to $220 billion in 2014. It still remains to be seen what these countries will take home when the summit ends on Saturday. Reporting for Studio 7 in Johannesburg, this is Benedictine Hlapo.
Meanwhile, the Chinese president today met African Union Commission Chairperson Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma and said Beijing highly values the continental body and the role it plays in Africa's development and integration. Mr. Xi called on China and the AU to enhance mutual political trust, perfect mechanism of dialogue, and forge a strategic partnership, among other issues. For perspective, Studio 7's Blessing Zulu reached the co-director of the Confiscus Institute at the Johannesburg University, Dr. David Munyai.
The China-Africa Forum this year celebrates its 15th year anniversary, formed in 2000. I think it has reached a point of maturity. It provides an opportunity for Chinese and African leaders to really check and do proper assessments in terms of how this relationship in the 15 years has grown, what are the gains, what are the losses, and how best to work together to achieve all the strategic objectives.
But would you say Africa has benefited from this relationship with Beijing?
Africa is, as you are aware, Africa is operating from a peripheral in the global politics. It's operating from a low base, and therefore in any relationship that is unequal, one wouldn't say that the achievements, it's a matter of 50-50. But if you look at it, it's better than nothing. It is gaining in terms of having a partner that listens, a partner that one deals with fairly and understanding each other, and is assisting, particularly in areas where Western countries are not featuring or are not interested or they are putting conditions.
Dr. David Munyai is the co-director of the Confiscus Institute at the Johannesburg University. He spoke with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Johannesburg, South Africa.
First Lady Grace Mugabe says Zimbabweans must cherish their independence as well as the peace prevailing in the country despite the hardships that the majority are currently facing. Correspondent Taurai Shaba has more.
Addressing thousands of people at Mapisa Growth Point in Matabeleland South today, Mrs. Mugabe said Zimbabweans should cherish the independence and unity brought about by nationalists like the late Vice President Joshua Nkomo, saying doing so would ensure that his soul rests in peace. Mr. Nkomo led his ZAPU Party into a unity accord with President Robert Mugabe's ZANU-PF in 1987, and the signing of the pact between the two nationalist parties is celebrated as Unity Day every December 22nd. The First Lady acknowledged that as a result of the economic crisis that the country is facing, many people are struggling, but said this should not make them forget the country's liberation history.
We really value the unity that was bequeathed to us by our father, the late Vice President Joshua Nkomo. He sacrificed a lot for all of us, and if we want his soul to rest in peace, we must maintain the unity. If we keep that unity, he will surely rest in peace.
Mrs. Mugabe, whose recent criticism of war veterans made the headlines, said Zimbabweans should always respect the role played by Liberation War heroes like President Mugabe, the late Nkomo himself, as well as the likes of Simon Kayamoyo and Kembo Mohadi, who were among some senior ZANU-PF leaders at the meeting. The First Lady took her time explaining the Zim Asset Program, which she said was meant to counter sanctions that she said were imposed on Zimbabwe by Western countries, adding that it will help pull the country out of the current mess. She also said Chinese leader Xi Jinping's recent state visit shows the fruition of Zimbabwe's Look East policy, adding that the agreement signed between Zimbabwe and China will help put the economy back on track. While asserting that President Mugabe and his ZANU-PF party are people at heart, Mrs. Mugabe also attacked the MDCP leader, Morgan Tsvangirai, accusing him of bringing suffering to the majority through asking Western countries to impose sanctions against Zimbabwe. She also took a swipe against some Western NGOs, which she accused of taking advantage of food insecurity in areas like Matarel and South, and using food aid as a way of trying to effect regime change.
My NGO, you don't have to call them NGO, as I want to know.
I know that there are many NGOs who come here to give you food aid, but I say to you, if you see someone coming to you year in, year out to help you with food and not doing anything to enable you to feed yourself, that person is not your friend. They are not helping you at all. I know they normally increase their aid during election time, and they will be telling you that your leaders don't care about you. They will be telling you to vote your true leaders out of power so that they can be replaced by Western stooges.
But Mrs. Mugabe herself said she had brought a consignment of food and other household items as, quote, a show of her love for the people. Among the donations she announced were 200 tons of maize and 120 tons of rice. She also announced that there was 1,000 tons of maize meal that people would receive from the GMB as part of government's food aid. Mrs. Mugabe has often used their meetings to lambast some senior party leaders for being at the center of factionalism in the ruling ZANU-PF party, but today she praised Matarel and South Party supporters, saying there was no factionalism in the province. She also warned youths against being involved in political violence. Reporting for Studio 7 from Mapisa and Matarel in South, this is Taurai Shala.
The People's Democratic Party, or PDP, led by former MDC Secretary General Tendai Biti, says the imposition of ideas by some opposition parties discouraged them from signing a national document aimed at fighting for the leveling of the electoral field ahead of the 2018 general elections. In an indirect reference to the MDCT, Deputy PDP spokesperson George Mkwananzi said, today, while the electoral reforms agenda or NERA was a noble idea, several parties felt that it was being imposed on them by Morgan Tsvangirai's party. Opposition parties have been calling for an overhaul of the electoral process, claiming that it is skewed in favor of President Robert Mugabe's ZANU-PF party, but the ruling party has dismissed these allegations as baseless. The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission is expected to hold a crucial meeting with all political parties tomorrow to discuss some of their concerns. For perspective on the electoral reforms agenda, Studio 7's Gibbs Dube speaks to Mkwananzi and lawmaker Tabitha Kumalo, deputy spokesperson of the MDCT. Mkwananzi says the MDCT should stop imposing its agenda on other opposition parties.
It is a very noble idea that opposition parties come together. However, we must also hasten to say that we will not tolerate any big man syndrome. We will not allow anyone to desperately seek relevance by using other political parties as condoms towards the attainment of their extrication from their crisis that they are facing at the moment as a party. However, as a party, we will engage anybody and cooperate with anyone who would like to bring change to Zimbabwe.
Honorable Kumalo, it seems as if Mr. Mkwananzi is saying that your party has got this big man syndrome, which is actually chasing away other parties. So do you agree with that kind of notion?
That is absolutely a sad statement coming from my colleague, because people in Zimbabwe do not eat this classification of a big man syndrome, a small boy syndrome. They don't eat that. People are suffering. We never said we are better than anybody else. But honestly speaking, we are the party that is in parliament. And all what we are saying is we have gone through elections since 1999. And to this date, including my comrade that I'm speaking to now, we are all crying the same song, ZANU stole the elections. I think the time has come for us to look at the bigger picture. To me, my opinion is the idea going to take us out of this? And if it is, why not rally together?
Mr. Mkwananzi, maybe you can answer that.
Yeah, definitely. But I just need to caution that The fact that we are in the opposition does not necessarily mean that whenever somebody makes a call, an invitation, we just jump into the bandwagon. Remember, there are some fundamental and structural differences that have resulted with several, you know, parties breaking away to form themselves and seeking individual identity. Those things have not been addressed, and some people still have very strong objections against certain individuals, seem to be spearheading certain things because they taint them by virtue of their, you know, lack of democratic credentials. These are some of the fundamental differences structurally and, you know, otherwise, that make it very difficult for parties like PPP to work with other people, you know.
Honorable Kumalo.
That is very sad, because it's now not about the reforms that are causing the crisis of illegitimate elections and formation of illegitimate government. It is now about personalities, and it's also about me, myself, and I syndrome. That will not achieve the goal of the Zimbabwean people by taking them to Canaan. And the issue of breakaways, you have all broken away. What have we achieved as a country by your breakaways? Nothing, zilch. We are still in the same problem with ZANU-PF as we were before we broke away. And all what is critical now, it's no longer about the document, the NERA. It is now about us as a party. And we're not here to discuss about us as a party, bullying people, compromising them. Not at all. We are talking about a document that we are trying to produce, which document must meet the standards for us to go to a free and fair and credible elections. And what is it that these other smaller parties have achieved vis-a-vis the issue of coming in with reforms that will create a level playing field for the benefit of all of us, not for the benefit of one party?
Mr. Mkwananzi, you've got the last word.
The moment someone talks about smaller parties, that's where they lose it, because we are not smaller than MTCT. We have never contested an election with MTCT, and they beat us. That has not happened. So insofar as PDP is concerned, it is not smaller than MTCT. So that issue is out. We need to approach each other with respect on equal terms. Then we will be able to work and produce something positive for Zimbabwe. Respect first, and then we will be able to do something that is going to benefit everyone.
That was George Nkwananzi, deputy spokesperson of the People's Democratic Party, and lawmaker Tabita Kumalo, deputy spokesperson of the MDCT, speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube.
Remember to stay tuned to Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts on the Women's Forum will lead discussions on events at the ICASA conference.
And now to recap today's top stories.
First Lady Grace Mugabe says Zimbabweans must cherish the political independence and peace they are enjoying in the country despite the hardships they are currently facing.
A People's Democratic Party leader and former finance minister Tendai Biti urges Parliament and ordinary Zimbabweans to reject the so-called mega deals signed between Harare and Beijing until their contents are made public.
That's all we had for you tonight. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Chris Gande in Washington, D.C.
And I'm John Gagandemiri, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.